Welcome, everyone, to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We're on location today, as they say, Brian.
Yes, that's what they say.
We are at Truck and Tap in Duluth, Georgia. If you listen to the show, you know Truck and Tap is a longtime sponsor of the show. We've got Zach Hirschuk with us here, one of the owners. Zach, how's it going?
Doing fantastic.
And we have Cliff. Cliff doesn't have a mic right now. We'll change that later. But Cliff, welcome. Thanks for joining us. And we also, special guest, we have Tiffany Dillon from Gwentage Wine Bar, right?
Yes.
Very cool. Thanks
for
joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, awesome day here today. This is our hot beverages, cold weather, Brian.
Yes, it is.
That we're doing. And we thought maybe we wouldn't get any cold weather to have our hot beverages because we've been 60. I think we got almost 70 degrees a couple days ago. So weatherman was kind to us. Mother Nature was kind to us. We're just below 50 today, I think. Let's see.
I think it was the 40s.
47 degrees, according to the watch.
Yeah. Mine says 43, but we're in that range. Yeah.
It is cool enough to enjoy some hot beverages. We're going to talk about a lot of the different hot drinks. We're going to learn a little bit about wine. Always fun to kind of cross the streams and adventure into other areas, Brian.
Are we supposed to not cross the streams? Isn't that what the Ghostbusters say?
Or I don't think we need to take their advice in this.
Oh,
if we ever have to go attack ghosts with lasers, we probably want to remember it at that time.
Puffed Marshmallow Man would be a good feature.
He would be
on
good
this.
Here, yeah, right? He some be, of the drinks we have, he'd pair well.
Yes. Yeah, those. We'll just carve off a piece of him and throw him in with all the hot chocolate stuff, especially.
Trick him to walking over the fire pit, get him nice and toasty.
Yeah,
and
delicious.
Good to go.
So good.
Yeah, good stuff. And y'all, Nate is here with us, but when we're on location, Nate doesn't get a mic usually. So we run out of mics, but he's here. He's taking care of the mixer for us, making sure that all this greatness gets recorded. So it's going to be a good time. Good time. But we have. Here on site for us to drink today, we have a hot malt barley wine, which I have never had before, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. We have a Malt Creek or Glue Creek, I guess they call it, right?
Yeah, Glue Creek is a common name for it.
Yeah, we have a malt wine. We could have like hot toddies, and we have some hot chocolate-based beverages. One you found, Brian, I believe, that uses a chartreuse.
Yeah,
right?
Green chartreuse. And I don't speak French, but it's a vert chaud, I think is what it's. Translates to hot green. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it is seriously like 2 ounces of green chartreuse and about 4 ounces of hot chocolate. And it's surprisingly good together. I know you'll disagree with that, but like nine out of 10 people agree that
would
you're
like
wrong.
They agree that I'm wrong. So, I'm not big on the bitter herbal stuff and that, but I have an Amaro that you guys said is pretty one-dimensional as far as Amaros go. Not complex, right?
That might be overstating a little bit. I think it skews towards the richer, sweeter notes, but it has some herbal qualities to it. I like it, so I don't want to trash talk
that's
it. I think it's quite nice, but
I put it in a hot chocolate, and I love it.
I think it's really good, yeah.
And we have our beer caramelizers here, which are the big metal sticks that you heat in a fire pit.
That's right.
And you're supposed to poke a beer with them.
Yes.
But I poked a hot chocolate, Brian, and that worked out well.
And
I poked the hot chocolate and then gave it to Zach, and he put it in his mouth after I poked it.
He did, and he smiled and thanked you for it. Yeah, it was great.
So it's just a wild time here. But we're going to dive all into our beery drinks in just a moment. But Tiffany, thanks for joining us. I know you've been with us a while because we've been mad sciencing and all that.
It's been fun.
Yeah, good. But we want to talk a little bit about wine. You were kind enough to bring a mulled wine over here.
Yes.
What makes a good mulled wine? Like, where do you start from with that?
I think tradition. So I come from a Swedish family. Glögg is something that has always been present at Christmas. And so I used that recipe along with the wonderful Barefoot Contessa / Ina Gardens recipe and made one that we have here today. So
it's very good. And that's, I like the barley wine that I'm going to say we did because really we all kind of got in there.
Tiffany knows
Zach?
What she's doing. We winged it.
Yeah.
We winged it. The creek is good. The creek is good. I think the barley wine is really good. I think the wine outshines both of those as far as the hot malt beverages go.
So I win.
You're the winner.
Thank you.
Tiffany.
That's all
definitely.
I care about.
How much can you tell us about what went into it?
Well, I mean, if you can look up all the recipes, you'll find it. But it is apple cider, two really good bottles of Cabernet Sauvignon. And I use Paso Robles caps just because it's not as dry as Napa Valley. But you get a lot of the fruit. There's still some round tannin. So some of the apple cider, and then we have some orange juice will round that out. Then we have mulling spices and a little bit of honey.
Very nice.
It worked out well. Yeah. So, Tiffany, let's say someone comes down to Gwentage Wine Bar in Duluth, Georgia, and they're like, I'm a beer drinker, I'm a whiskey drinker, I'm whatever, but I wouldn't mind learning about wine. What's the first thing you're going to ask?
Well, I think it's more or less, what do you love about whiskey or bourbon or whatever liquor that you prefer? If you're a beer drinker, I also like to know that. But most of the time, I would say those folks either tend to go toward a Tempranillo, which is a Spanish wine, or a richer Napa Valley Cab. We've also had a few enjoy, like, it's a Spanish, it's a Douro, essentially. So it's a Tinto de Toro that comes from the Douro region of Spain. And we've changed a lot of folks. So they come in, guys will come in with their significance or whatever and have enjoyed a glass of wine rather than having bourbon. And then they come over to Chuck and Tap to have the bourbon later. There
you
go.
And it's convenient. You're close to each other, so you can do both. You know, you don't have to choose sometimes.
Is the Douro, is that the same area where they get the grapes for all the port wine as well? Is that like the Douro Valley or is that a different
port? Yes. No, it's area? All. Yeah. So most of the port wines are done in Portugal.
Okay.
And so, but they're on the border, so to speak.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so.
So if somebody like me enjoys an aggressively bitter and herbal kind of IPA, like what's the right kind of wine for that? Like, because I think that what some of the things you said, I'm like, they might be good, but I'm like, if somebody's like really a hop head, like maybe floral, maybe bitter, maybe a little fruity, but usually like the other
I would ones. Actually do a Spanish Monastrell.
Okay.
Yeah. Monastrell is a different grape and different wineries will treat it differently. But Monastrell definitely has a more pronounced kind of, it's got an astringency, but it does round out at the end. And it's something that a lot of our beer drinkers will enjoy.
Okay.
So
I'll take note of that. I may try that.
Or natural wines.
Oh, yeah.
Which are the unfined, unfiltered. A lot of those are red blends and that kind of thing.
Now, I realize all I know about natural wines are memes of a guy on social media making fun of them and them like tasting like feet. Like what exactly are natural wines and what do you expect from them flavor wise?
Well, most natural wines are farmed and grown either sustainably, organically or biodynamically or all three or two of the three, whatever. And they keep everything very natural. So everything is just in there. So most of the time when you are poured a glass of natural wine, it's cloudy. It will have some sediment in it. That sometimes scares people away, but that's actually where a lot of your flavor is. And it's just, it will have the smell of basically the farm. And so when you say dirty feet, which is what you just said, it's barnyard is what we like to say. To make it not sound like dirty feet.
Yes. So do we.
Because I don't like feet personally. So we'll just stick with barnyard. And so, but it tends to kind of what we say blow off as it sits there in front of you. But the taste is not at all how it smells.
Now, that's not just me saying it. That's just a meme I've seen. And I laugh at them without
many
really
people
understanding
say
it.
Yeah.
So
years ago, Brick Store Pub down in Decatur, Georgia had a wild beer fest, sour beer fest. And I did a little video for social media and I talked to Ryan, who was, I believe, the beer manager at the time and is now one of the owners of Good Word Brewing out here. Just another one just right up the street. But when I did the video, I was like, you know, how is it? You know, tell people what they'll expect here today. Oh, man, it's everything's so cheesy and feedy. It's wonderful. And I was like, you know, if someone didn't know what they were getting into here. And you know what, Tiffany, good example. Yeah. When you sampled the Creek, we didn't warn you that that was a sour, spontaneously fermented beer.
It was surprising.
A natural beer. You know, like that. And we use those same descriptors of horse blanket, feedy, cheesy. And there are some brewers that are trying to get away from those because of the, you know, the the implication from that.
You it's know, just using a thesaurus.
It's the implication.
It's just using a thesaurus and finding something prettier to say.
That's it. Yeah. I don't, but you know what? I have tried some where really hay, you know, this is, this got a strong note of hay. This is, you know, barnyard. I've tried some. I don't remember what it was, Brian. I don't know if you did, but we're talking about it. And I was like, man, this is going to sound insane. But this, I get a note of goat in this. And it wasn't, I didn't mean it negative at all. Whatever I happened to be drinking at the time, that was a positive component to everything.
May I ask if you meant goat meat or goat milk?
Meat.
Okay.
It was goat.
Because not a lot of folks have had goat meat. So I can understand why that would throw someone off.
Were you drinking it in a field, a pasture? Perhaps?
I was actually drinking it through a goat.
Through a goat. That makes a lot of sense.
Do you think that had anything to do with it?
Probably a little bit. I mean, not huge, but a little bit. Yeah.
All right. Gotcha.
So I will say our IPA drinkers that love Nelson Sauvin hops, that Sauvin is the same Sauvin as Sauvignon Blanc. Those are neighboring. That's one of the regions where hop growing turns into wine growing on that lateral in New Zealand. So a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc for some of our IPA drinkers can hit the spot.
I like some of those winey hops as well, like a Saison, you know, with a Nelson Sauvin, or what's the other one that's popular? Hallertau Blanc.
Oh, Hallertau Blanc.
That's got winey character to it. But those hops in like a Saison, I do really dig that.
Can I reference the things that we were saying about Barnyard and Feet?
Sure.
So speaking of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, people will drink those, smell those, and actually say it smells like cat pee.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Same with IPAs, hops. Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, is that the same with IPAs?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not the beer connoisseur here at the table.
And Tiffany, that's something that, you know what, it's kind of like cilantro. Some people eat cilantro and it tastes like soap. And they're like, I'm out. You know, even my ex-wife, I could put one cilantro leaf in a huge batch of guac and she knew it, you know. So me, loaded up. I'm good with it. So, but I guess it's the same thing because we have a buddy who gets the strong cat pee from it. Citra, isn't it, that can give?
I think it's Citra. Is the Cascade or Citra? I think it's Citra.
But if you get that, if you taste that, that's all you taste, is the fact that it's cat.
Right.
So, is if he's the one I'm thinking of, that also gives him big headaches when he drinks it,
interesting.
I believe. So
interesting.
He's very sensitive to it, and it gives him a headache. So I think his body's just saying, hey, don't drink this, buddy. So that's what's happening there.
Tiffany, what are your thoughts on Beaujolais Nouveau?
Oh, delicious.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Well, there's a whole week in November dedicated to Beaujolais Nouveau. Yes.
I discovered it 4 or 5 years ago, and I loved it. And so I started doing some research on it. There's a lot of hate
there
for Beaujolais Nouveau.
Well, it's so young. It's very young. So every Nouveau is released within the same year it's made.
Right.
So it's high in acid. It's very tart, but it is delicious.
Okay. Yeah. I wondered because I did see that was a little debated topic in the wine
community. It is, but there's also Beaujolais Cuvée and Beaujolais Village. So you get different aging in the years and that kind of thing, but Nouveau is, it's awesome. Nice. Yeah.
You know, Zach, you were talking about the hops that give off the wine character. There was a beer that we tried, I think it was from Texas, I think it was maybe 903 Brewers, but it was a Cabernet Barrel-Aged Imperial Stout.
Yes, that was a Yeti or something like, not Yeti, but it was something like that. Sasquatch, Bigfoot, something like that.
Along those lines. But it was like a chocolate bar in a glass of wine is what it was. One of the best beers I've ever had. I mean, I've tried other wine barrel-aged stouts, and I'm like, that's good. These guys absolutely nailed it. It was just fantastic. Real noticeable wine character. The base stout that they did, it was great because those are flavors that do play really well together. You know, that's the deep, sweet, malty stout and the red wines like a Cabernet.
There are a number of red wine barrel aged beers I've had that have been stellar, and I think that red wine barrels may be underappreciated for what they could do in beers. But I really, really like what it contributes. It tends to be on the jammy side. I usually like it in a stout, you know, typically. But anything that might be aged in a barrel, probably, I think, would add something interesting. So I don't know. I guess I just like the flavor of red wine. I haven't had any in ages, but when I used to drink wine, it was mostly some variety of red. Shiraz, Syrah, whatever the heck it is. I don't know. I'm
Shiraz
no expert.
Shiraz and Syrah are about the same.
Yeah.
But in Australia, you call it a Shiraz.
Shiraz.
And then here we call it Syrah.
Okay. Yeah, whichever. I knew that they were synonymous or very close to being equivalent. So if I saw that, I'm like, oh, I would probably like that.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Zach, what is the hybrid mead and beer? Is that a graph?
Oh.
Brian, Braggot? Do you know? Is that
Braggot?
Braggot.
Yeah, I think
so. I think
Braggot.
That may be it. But I was thinking, like we were talking about the red wine and the stout, you could cuvee those up right here, man. You could have you some red wine and a stout and, you know, do it as a cocktail, bring them together there. So
that's interesting. And then hot poke it.
Yeah.
We can make that happen right now.
See?
Then top it with some Amaro.
Where are we going here?
We've been putting Amaro in everything, honestly, so yeah, we might as well not stop.
I've never ordered a shot of cab with a barrel-aged stout at a bar before, but I don't know what is stopping me.
Right. Well, they call it a sidecar. It's like, give me an Imperial Stout with a sidecar cab.
The ultimate Boilermaker. The connoisseur's Boilermaker.
Actually, that sounds pretty good.
There we go.
Okay.
We would have to come up with the right cab.
That's the next episode.
That's it. Yeah.
Wine Boilermakers.
So the last time we got together, if y'all didn't hear the show or went around then, we got together at your other location, Taps at Feast, and you guys had a lot of sake there. So we did sake, and we tried through and learned a lot about that. And I think we capped the night off with some sake bombs. So, and we had squid on a stick.
Oh, yeah.
Squid on a stick. So that was a good time. So, well, Tiffany, thank you so much for coming and hanging with us, for sharing the mulled wine and educating us a little bit.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's a good time. Good times. Y'all, we're going to get back on, you know what, hot drinks in general. We're definitely going to talk about beer here. But, Brian, you just said why. Why? You asked why, Brian, about hot drinks.
I figure a lot of people are going to ask that when... I think a lot of people that haven't tried like hot cocktails or hot beers or anything like that, like, why would you do that? And I did some Googling, and the first thing people asked in a lot of threads on Reddit where people were asking for recipes on hot cocktails or hot beer is, why would you do that? So I'm like, why would we do that? Why do we do that, Tim? Why do you think we do that?
I mean, when you're cold, it warms you up, man, for one thing.
And that seems to be the main reason, but it's not just that it warms you up. Any hot drink will warm you up. Coffee will warm you up. You add alcohol to it with the whatever it does, thinning of the blood or whatever.
Here, Brian?
It doubles. It's bro science. It totally is.
I'm good with that.
It doubles the heat. So last night I was trying out a hot Negroni recipe I saw online. And let me tell you, I turned into a space heater. I was radiating heat. I actually distorted some of the paint on the wall
when I walked past it.
So I'm like, there is something to how warm this will make you. So if it's cold out there, it's a...
Heat it up.
Yeah.
And Brian, your general level of hotness, you're pretty hot as it is, right?
I totally am.
So just adding to that, man, it gets dangerous.
It was dangerous. I'm glad nobody was around, and I stayed far away from anything flammable, and I didn't eventually cool off.
That's good, man. Yeah, but I think that's it. You know what? We want to stay warm, and we like alcohol, so why not bring the two together, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Nate and I were talking before we went on the air here. He was talking about when he was a kid, if they got feeling under their weather, that he'd get a little hot toddy. You know, he wasn't getting lit up or anything, but he said a little bit of a hot toddy, you know, to cure what ails him. And I think it's wonderful that one of Nate's childhood memories is having hot toddies.
Yeah.
Which is a good time.
That is heartwarming. You know, and there's something else to be said for when you apply heat to alcoholic beverages, especially something like an Amaro, you're releasing a lot of the aromatics when you do that. So I think that it enhances the flavor in different ways. So I think that's another really positive thing about heating up a beverage.
It's nice. So, Zach, before we started doing all this, we've got a table full of hot alcoholic beverages. Were you into hot alcoholic beverages, and did you have a favorite?
I'm with Nate. Hot toddy, when you're just starting to get sick, or maybe when you're coming off of it, to just either nip it in the bud or really wrap it up, that's probably...
It's good medicine?
Yeah, it's about the only time I ever use my Keurig, to be honest with you.
Okay.
It's hot toddy.
Fair enough.
Is that a cup you can get? Just hot toddy and it spits out a
No, boot? No, no. Oh, okay. Just hot water.
Oh, okay. All right.
Honey and lemon and bourbon.
Get it in there. So I find the hot toddy, as you were talking, one-dimensional earlier. I think you're basically diluting your whiskey and putting a little honey in there. So for me, I don't get excited about it. Now, I do like an Irish coffee, which I think is another fairly simple You know, or they can get complex, but you can be simple. They I was can. Down at, we have an Irish bar here in Atlanta called Fidel's. And this was, to date myself, this was back in the 90s, Brian. You remember the 90s? You've heard of those, right?
I've heard people debate whether or not it actually existed, but yeah.
So we went down there one day when it was kind of cold, and we go in and we're talking, it's like, oh, I'm cold. And the bartender's like, would you like an Irish coffee? And my buddy's wife, she's like, oh, I don't like coffee. And you go in a thick Irish accent. Well, you don't much have to like coffee to like Irish coffee. It's like, yes, that's a very good point you have.
So. Since you brought that up, do you know why? One of the big reasons why they put whipped cream on the top of an Irish coffee?
Make it look like dessert.
I mean, it does look nice. But when you put a lot of alcohol in a hot coffee, because the alcohol evaporates at a much lower rate, it hits you like very like in the nose. You get slammed with all the alcohol. If you put whipped cream on top of it, you lock all those alcoholic vapors in the liquid, and you do not get them all up in your nose, and you get to enjoy the flavor more without the nasal assault.
Now, see, typically you want the aromas to come out there. So with this one, it's too much. You need to slow it down a bit.
And huh? I think it's because I think with especially with those hot, they tend to be like really, really hot, like blazing hot in some cases.
I think that's a lie that the Irish made up to. Because some guys, he's like, hey, mate, what you got in the cup? He's like, oh, it's like 50% whiskey and 50% coffee. He's like, dude, what are you doing? And the other guy's thinking real fast. There was some whipped topping there. And he's like, oh, no, it's a dessert. It's an after dinner cocktail. And then it was okay. It wasn't just being an alcoholic.
But I'm telling you, you know, try it with and without, because I've experimented with, you know, maybe I'll throw a little shot of whiskey in my coffee and I go in to take a hit off of it. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a lot of booze nose.
Yeah.
You throw something on top of it. You get all the whiskey flavor, you get all the coffee without all of the intense booze up your nostrils. Right. So that's a big reason. I think it's the biggest reason they do it.
So honestly. Cliff, do you dabble in the hot cocktails? Is that something you do? And you and I how long have you been in Atlanta, Cliff?
Yeah, I've been in Atlanta for 20 years.
Okay. We're about the same time. Did you late 90s or early 2000s?
Early 90s.
That's 30 years ago, man. I think the years are just flying by so much. That's when the early 90s were.
I think that's the inspiration for a cocktail we just made at Truck and Tap, Dead in 20.
There you go.
Yeah, it would have been Dead in 30 maybe 10 years ago.
Yes, that's right.
No,
I think it all starts with Irish cream and coffee. And then it just kind of slides down from there. You start thinking, oh, wow, what else can I put in this coffee with the Irish cream? And then you just sort of become a little bit of a scientist and start heating up alcohol and heating up Amaros and heating up the hot chocolate with Fernet. I mean,
yes. Shoving hot metal bars into glasses of beer.
That's right.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Zach, we took a quick break and you went and poked an old chub for me. And that's actually right. For Brian and I, we've got a nice mug full here where you poked an old chub. And this is Scotch Ale.
From
Oscar Blues, and we took the hot poker and rammed it down in the mug for 3 to 5 seconds or so. And the foam on the beer gets quite warm, actually. The beer gets a little bit warm, but not really hot. But you get a lot of caramelization. You get more toastiness out of it. So if you've got a hot metal rod around anywhere, and you know what? We like the folks at Beer Caramelizer, not a sponsor of the show, but we have a couple of theirs. If you search for the Beer Caramelizer online, they have a purpose-made device that you can get, and it's very cool, very handy.
Yes,
it makes poking a beer quite easy.
It does.
It's a lot of fun. You know, something a little different, a little adventurous. And if you decide to give it a try, make sure to get the poker good and hot. You want it just screaming hot. It's really good with a maltier beer. Like the Scotch Ale is a perfect platform for poking the beer. Now, what was the style we got in earlier, Zach? Which one was that?
We had
that was an ESB, right?
Digital Comforts from our neighbors at Good Word.
Yeah.
They're English style bitter. So not quite an ESB, but yes, balanced and malty. I got a little bit left here.
Still pretty tasty. I mean, it worked well in that. It was tasty, but it's fun. It's something different. If you decide to give it a shot, try the beer before you poke it. And then poke it and compare the two, because I think that really kind of highlights the difference in what's going on.
I think this old chub is marvelous, and it becomes very creamy. The head on it, very fine head on it, and just it develops a creaminess and like a I don't know, it's like a burnt sugar or something like that. It's really, really nice.
So yeah. when you do it, for those of you, if you haven't watched the video, watch the video first, because you know we learn everything from Daddy YouTube. But don't fill your cup up all the way, because when you put the hot poker in, you're going to knock all the carbonation in the beer out of suspension, and it's going to foam up pretty substantially. I filled these mugs. These are like 20-ounce mugs. I filled them up like halfway, and the foam was to the top by the time we were done with it. But yeah, that reducing the carbonation is going to create obviously a different mouthfeel, different texture to the beer. Similar to something like a nitro. It's not a nitro beer, of course, but you're going to have a much more like English style. If you take a fully carbonated, you know, typical American, you know, beer you'd have on draft or in a can, and you poke it, you know, you're going to end up with something that's much closer to a nitro beer or
like a Cascade.
Yeah, exactly. Like Cascade. A Cascade. Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
And I gotta say another thing I've tried recently, and people have heard me talking about Bowling Alley Yingling. I've hot poked a regular Yingling.
Brian? Yeah.
It was nearly as good as that Bowling Alley Yingling. It got there.
Do you guys know the story of Bowling Alley Yingling?
I don't.
We'll make it really short. Yes. Brian and I were out goofing off one day, and we stopped in a bowling alley to go bowling and play some video games. And we're like, let's grab a beer. A bowling alley does not have a huge selection of beer, but they had Yingling on draft. We're like, I'll take a Yingling. Y'all, one of the finest beers we've ever had in our life. I don't know where they got that particular keg of Yingling, but it was the greatest Yingling I've ever had. And Brian has been on a quest since then to recreate that moment in time.
I have been looking, and when I see it on tap, I will frequently order some just to see if it's as good. And it's never been as good. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not that shining, glorious Bowling Alley Yingling that I had. But hot poking a Yingling that I got just out of a 12-ounce can, man, that was close. That got really close to what it was. I have no idea what on earth was actually in that keg. It was crazy, but I recommend people try that, and they will get a little of that experience. You too, you know, can almost get to the bowling alley.
It's time and place. It's time and
it
place.
Is. Sometimes, tastes, yeah. That
nothing tastes better than just a cold lager after on a hot day.
Yeah. We were out playing pinball last weekend or weekend before, and it was a little hot in the arcade, and that they had pretty limited beer selections, but they had PBR tall boys. I had a PBR tall boy in it. I enjoyed it just fine. You know, it was, yeah. So it was great. Did you say the wine bar has PBR tall boys? Yes. Something for everyone. There, yeah. So it's a good time. But on the topic of hot poke beer, we do have a little more information on that. So that is from the German tradition, Bier Stockeln. I know I'm saying that. Brian, you took German. How's the pronunciation?
I think it's like Stockeln or something like that. Yeah. I don't remember. Bier Stockeln.
But that means beer sting or beer spike. And they said springtime or Bock beers are a traditional one that they do it with. Lots of recommendations if you're out there looking for beers that have residual sugars for best results. Totally makes sense. Caramelizing that sugar, bringing that in there.
Yeah.
Malts, residual sugars are really nice. So what does this actually do? I think we've shared some of this, but it's going to caramelize some of that malt in the beer. It's going to contribute potentially some smoky character. Zach, as you were talking about, it softens that mouthfeel, kind of simulating like a cask ale or a nitro, give you a nice creamy mouthfeel. The overall temperature of the beer is going to raise a little bit. They said around 5 degrees, but you'll notice that the foam on the beer is going to be very warm. So it's like going to be capped with a thick white foam. The beer is going to be warmed up a little bit. It won't necessarily be hot, but it's a good time. Like Zach said, leave room, but get about a half a glass because it is going to roar up. Make sure your beer poker is good and hot, and ram it down in there maybe 3 to 5 seconds. You don't need to swirl or anything, but you can if you want to, but just give it in there for 3 to 5 seconds. Probably going more off the foam coming up towards the top.
Correct. Stop before it overfills.
Don't overflow. Yeah. Yeah. If you've gone over the top, you've gone over the top.
You've gone too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But it's something fun to check out. We recommend everybody give it a shot. And, you know, Brian, we mentioned the hot toddy. I think that may be one that a lot of people are introduced to. You know, Cliff, you talked about you know, the Irish creams and a coffee, or Kahlua. Kahlua is one that I think a lot of people may have, you know, dabbled with when they were younger. But the toddy, I think that was the uncle's drink, the grandpa's drink, the grandpa's cocktail. Are they
that
cool
always seemed
again?
Like it.
I Zach, are they cool again? Kahlua?
No, the hot toddy.
I think they're cool again. Yeah.
They're cool again?
I don't think they ever went out of style. I think it's timeless.
Okay.
It's Levi's jeans of hot cocktails.
All right. That's fair.
It's
That's
like
fair.
Chicken soup, you know. It's never fully in, but it's never fully out, maybe. Yeah, it's the chicken soup of alcohol. It makes you feel better, right? I mean, it's hot too, so I mean it works.
Zach or Cliff, do either of you guys have a favorite toddy recipe or favorite whiskey to use in there? Any toddy preferences?
I mean, depending on how sick you are, 1.5 to 3 ounces of bourbon, an ounce of lemon, throw that in your Keurig and do the water thing.
All right.
Okay.
And then enough honey to, you know, an ungodly amount of honey.
A lot of honey.
Yep.
So we were introduced to, I was That's introduced to this drink 15 years ago. I call it ginger drink, but it's basically a little sachet with crystallized ginger and honey. You put it in hot water, you dilute it. It's good for your voice. Like if our throat's raspy and we come on the show, sometimes we'll have that. But I think that would make a banging toddy.
Oh, I think it really would.
Yeah.
It's because
ginger, honey, lemon, whiskey, hot water. I think that could do it.
Because
so.
A lot of one common variant of the toddy is to actually use tea of some variety. I've seen black tea. I've seen other herbal tea. And like the herbal, I see ginger as being, well, ginger, they do ginger tea, but I see ginger as being that tea element that you could have.
The tea element.
I think it would be, I think that would be a really good idea, actually. It's ready
made. I got a nice barrel-aged whiskey at home right now. I just got recently from Nate. Malort.
Oh, yeah. You should definitely
ginger
do
drink,
that.
Barrel-aged Malort, and a nap, I think, is going to be what's called.
I think Zach just turned green over there for like a second.
No. I think you're onto something. Malort is a fantastic spirit that you're definitely going to enjoy. And everyone out here, if you haven't had Malort, you gotta go for it.
Don't miss it.
Drink it slowly and savor it. That's what I recommend.
Yeah. And a snifter if you could.
Yes. Yeah.
Is really the best glassware for Malort.
I think
nothing
you know
less
what,
than
I'm
3 ounces.
Dark wood paneling, a smoking jacket, a leather chair, Malort in a snifter.
You know what pairs great? A Chicago dog.
Chicago dog and a shot of Malort.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. It. Brian, did you get the rat memorial t-shirt there? There we go.
I did, in fact. I'm wearing it.
Brian's actually wearing
I'm
it right
exposing
now under
myself
his beer guy's
to,
shirt. So.
To the crowd.
But there was a rat in Chicago that I think he got like steamrolled over in when they were paving the streets, and I guess it's become a memorial where people throw coins and pour mini bottles of Malort, and they've got a t-shirt to memorialize.
It makes perfect sense.
I'd forgotten I was wearing it. You know what? There's a theory, though, that it wasn't probably a rat. It may have actually been a squirrel, but
okay.
That's just one of the crazy theories out there.
The mystery continues.
Yeah. I forgot I was even wearing it. I'm glad you brought that up. I wore it just in case it came up. And
all right.
There it
Malort's
did. Yeah.
come up quite a bit here on the show. We're going to lose listeners because they're sick of hearing us talk about Malort. So we'll stop talking about Malort. Cliff, let's talk about Truck and Tap. All right. So how many locations of Truck and Tap are there? Did I see another one is opening up soon?
One opened up in Lawrenceville.
Did
open
in Lawrenceville. Okay. So we've got Woodstock, Duluth.
Alpharetta. And Lawrenceville.
In Lawrenceville now, right? And then at the outlet malls, you have a little bar, right?
We have a little coffee outpost with full spirits and canned beer.
Okay. And then the taps at Feast that we were talking about earlier, which is in an Asian food hall at Truist Park. And there's beer and spirits and plenty of sake there, right?
We had such a good time drinking sake and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And eating squid.
Squid on a stick.
Are there plans to open up yet another establishment of some variety? Would it be the same thing, or are you going in a different direction? Or are you going to stick with what you have?
So, yeah, there's a site in downtown Norcross. Can I say that?
Okay.
He just did.
that there are some plans.
Okay. I actually thought Thinking about the cities that are coming up pretty well here, Norcross seems like a good place to go. You know, I know there's stuff going on over there.
So they've got a lot of potential in their downtown. And they're surrounded by lots of rooftops and lots of people that want to have a cocktail.
Good stuff. Yeah. Now, so far, you got, for those that are in Atlanta, we have what we call ITP and OTP. And Atlanta has a, we call it the perimeter 285 that circles the city. And it's almost like clan mentality of if you live inside or outside that circle. And the people inside ITP, inside the perimeter, I'll give you an example, guys. Brian came out to my house. I live in Woodstock, OTP. Brian lives in Buckhead, ITP. He came out to my house and we're at the grocery store and we're walking out and there's a minivan on there that has a Harvard alum sticker on it.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian looks at me and as serious as anything goes, huh, I'm really surprised to see that out here. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about, man? So anyhow,
no
and
comment.
And you know what? That is probably, Brian, that's probably a fair assessment of a lot of the opinion of people. They just don't like it.
That was an uncensored moment when I realized what I said. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's, I know what that sounds like. Yeah, okay. I got it.
So I immediately put my possum down. How dare you speak about
it? I can't even finish this possum. I am so disgusted.
But I can't believe the DMV let them get a license out here. They're from Boston?
Yeah, I know,
right? They let them into Cherokee County?
That's it, yeah.
I thought we had a sign.
There. We did.
We got to get the sign fixed.
No Yankees.
No Boston Yankees. People, for sure.
It's crazy.
No chance.
So, I've been out there 20 years now. I've lived in Woodstock. And when I first moved there, the big news that was very controversial, the older folks in town were not happy that they had built a super Walmart there. Like, that was too advanced. They didn't pay for that. But getting off track a little bit, my point I was making there, Cliff, is you guys so far at least have been an OTP kind of thing. Do you continue to keep that? Any plans to move into Atlanta?
I think I can say there's no plans to move ITP. That was our original concept.
From way back, yeah.
For us, it's we need to be relevant. Our mission is to introduce people to their next favorite beer. And a lot of that need is really being met ITP, honestly. When we opened in Woodstock 8 years ago, this was Trucker Tap was kind of a continuation of the
Barrel and Barley.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Barrel and Barley. You know, 10 years ago when I opened Barrel and Barley, 8 years ago when we opened Trucker Tap, these were, we were, the craft beer world was a lot different place. You know, we were really the only place that you could try so many of these beers in these neighborhoods that we loved. When we opened up in Alpharetta, obviously here in Duluth, good word was here and they were doing such an amazing job. Reformation was in Woodstock doing an amazing job helping to introduce people to craft beer. And what Trucker Tap did was we came in and were we'd like to think at least that we were here to say here's the other great breweries. We got the pump was primed with good word. Was coming in here producing amazing English beers, amazing IPAs, amazing sour beers. Yet, they helped build this market. We got to come in afterwards and say, hey, here's some of the other stuff that's around the world, around the country, and introduce those things to people. If a market ITP came where we could be a relevant force of good for craft beer and for craft beverages, sure, we would be that never say never. But where we've kind of found ourselves and what our mission has always been is to be an introductory force and to try to be someone who is promoting these brands that deserve recognition that may not get it otherwise. If you look at our menu, we have some stuff that you might find around town, in other places for sure, without a doubt. But we're also going to be the place that you're going to get things that you can't get otherwise.
Sure.
So, you know, why would we go to downtown Decatur? The Brickstore Pub is there. Why would, you know, why would we go to AV?
That's a
Argus is there.
Fair points. Yeah.
There's already someone playing in that neighborhood.
It's not like a competition thing. Like either we want to be competitive or we're trying to, you know, not be competitive. It's there's a bigger picture to this, especially when it comes to, you know, we're talking to you guys in craft beer. There's a bigger picture to it. There is a mission behind all this, and it's easy to anyone that's been in this industry for as long as you know you guys have. We have it can be easy to forget that, but it still is important. It still is really a mission that we think when we're selecting sites is we want to be relevant. Not only because hey, if we're irrelevant, we're not going to make any money, of course. But there's a mission. There's a reason behind that relevancy.
Probably more important now than ever with the challenges out there, to, you know, to be relevant, to have those options out there for people to enjoy. And guys, we're here. We're in a back corner of your Duluth location and lively in here, right?
Very
now,
lively.
You know? So people
yes.
coming out, enjoying drinks. You know, it's good. It's good to see that because I've seen a lot of friends in the restaurant business, in the brewing business, and that it's they're not seeing it. You know, the way they need to. It's tough.
Well, if I may, you know that. You guys kind of alluded to it earlier, the bowling alley Yuengling. That's a you know, there's nothing better than the lawnmower beer, the shower beer, you know.
Wait, the shower beer? What's the shower beer?
Well, what? Hang on. Why do you not know about shower beers?
I have not had a shower beer.
Guys, hold on. Here. He
sorry,
have a shower
the shower Amaro.
Yeah. There you go. That's it. Yeah.
You know, I had a dear regular of mine in my first beer shop that was, and he was like, hey man, if you can ever get it, I was on this cruise ship and I had this beer from the Bahamas called Kalik, and it was the best beer I've ever had. And I want to, like, I was at a little lumber store and he was like, I want to learn how to brew this. So I was like, well, all right, man, you know, like you're going to need some extra like fermentation equipment and all this stuff. And eventually one day I actually was able to get Kalik for him. And I gifted him, like I bought a case, like $20 or whatever. I gifted him the case. It's just industrial
macro.
It's
beer, right?
Macro Bahamian beer.
Yeah.
And he tried it. He was like, yeah, man, it's not as good sitting on my couch as it is on a cruise ship. Like,
of course. Sure. Yeah.
You know, good beer is great, but what is important about when we're creating a bar like Truck and Tap. It's the place. It's the importance. It's your beer is going to taste better. Your drinks are going to taste better. If you're in a place that's comfortable and your place that, you're welcome, a place that's fun, setting this experience is more important now than ever to introduce some people to, again, our mission is to introduce people to their next favorite beer. It's important to have a great space to do that because if we just had four blank walls, and a long bar, you know, that wouldn't work.
And drink in my sad closet, my sad room by myself, if we're going to do that. So
exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah. So guys, you were around pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. And again, it's easy to remember when you guys started because we really kicked off at the same time, like January-ish 2016, you know, right around there. Is there anything now, because besides a global pandemic, we have definitely seen the craft beer industry, the hospitality industry on a little bit of a slide. Is there anything that you're doing different now than you were pre-pandemic or pre-beer-pocalypse, whatever you want to call it? Or is there anything that you recommend out there that you think is making a difference in challenging times?
I think that's it. It's some actually a good friend of mine from Reformation, Ryan over there, said it best. And he said, since the pandemic, people are coming out for experiences. The product is almost secondary. So we're spending a we're doing our best to not neglect beer quality, of course. And you know, still have wine, still clean our own lines and all those fun things, and still picking what we think is the best beers we can every week for our draft lines. But putting a focus on experience has been incredibly important. This is, you know, when people were locked down, they realized how important it was to spend time together in person. Zoom doesn't cut it. It doesn't. And spend time together in person, have a beer, have a couple of drinks, and enjoy each other's company, whether that's with live music, whether that's in a bar that has the vibes you're looking for, you know, with the, you know, whatever that is. We're trying much more consciously now than we were before to match what people are expecting,
right,
from those experiences.
One of the experiential things that I'm kind of excited about with you guys, and I heard a rumor, I actually called up about it, but the Alpharetta location has an overproof rum bar.
Yes.
I heard that's going to be a round the year, round the calendar type of thing. Did I hear right? Is that becoming a 365 days a year type of situation?
We have the financing together and the budget approvals and the city approvals to put a roof on that space with outdoor heater, with like proper, not just mushroom meters are fine, but proper heating, proper cooling. And then, you know, to keep it off of a blowing, blistery, rainy day, you know, if it's 30 miles per hour winds and, you know, 35 degrees outside, like, no.
Probably not going to work, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, or a hurricane is coming through, you know, probably not. But yes, absolutely, we're very much trying to expand the life of the rooftop bar in our outfield location. And again, that you have access to the selection of all of our beers and bourbons and whatnot, but we are creating a great selection of rums up there, some classic and some of our own rum cocktails that we're really proud of up there. And it's a great time.
And tequila. So it's
and tequila.
And overproof tequila. Rum and tequila bar. Yeah. Right.
Very nice. Yep. Very nice. Yeah, I'm excited about that. I notice we do a shout out every week where we shout you guys out. Thank you for your support. And I'm always looking at the interesting things you do differently at each location. And that's one of the most different things from all the different locations that you do. And it's really a fun experiential concept. So yeah.
Anybody has mentioned Truck and Tap Roulette to you ever, that's Brian's doing. So that's
anybody done that? I was hoping you might have
like,
heard of that.
He's like, just come in and pick a number. He's like, 20 taps, just throw a number out there. He's like if you went to the Duluth location today and just took number, let's say 17, then you'd have a so-and-so.
Should we get some like 20-sided dice?
We could.
Get one of the wheels. Those would be the way to do it. One of the wheels on there.
And if you want to take it to the next level and you really want to leave it up to the hands of fate, you do the same thing with the food truck. You see how many they have, and you just random number select it. Yeah. So you pair the beer that you get with the. Yeah, that's a whole thing. You guys didn't know
about
that?
There you
go. Well, now you know.
Now I do.
Truck and Tap Roulette.
Get a roulette wheel with 20 spots on it.
Yeah, so yeah. Seriously.
Dungeons and Dragons has like a 20-sided dice, doesn't it?
I think they do. I think that's one of them. I think you can get them with more than that. But
yeah,
I think
it, yeah,
Nate said they got a 20.
D20
there. We've talked about a lot of these, and you know, Brian, we've covered a lot of these, I think, in our holiday shows before.
Yeah.
Like Wassail and Lamb's Wool, A Flip, Yard of Flannel. We've talked some about the mulled beers today.
We've got
the mulled barley wine, the mulled creek. The creek we did today didn't turn out as good as we've done in the past. I think maybe more honey, more sweetness, more orange, like fresh orange and stuff.
Yeah, that might help.
I think really kicked it up a notch there. But we had a whole bear full of honey.
Yes.
That I think we ended up
in. And most of that bear wound up in that Blue Creek.
Yeah.
I think when I've done it in the past, in addition to like some oranges or orange juice and some honey, I've added a little bit of cider to it, which I believe what went into the mulled wine.
Bring it in there a little bit.
I think that helps. Yeah. I think it gives... we discussed earlier, it brings some texture to it as well as some sweetness, and that would help. I think it's good. It's interesting. It's very much an evolving process. People have been adding ingredients as they go, so it's like, okay, where is this now? I'm like, all right, it's a little tart. Let's add a little bit more honey. Oh, we need a little bit more spice. Let's add some cinnamon sticks. And so what it is right now, we haven't tried it in a good 30, 40 minutes. It's probably a completely different beverage now. It may be amazing.
Yeah, we don't. It has been a while. We'll have to try. And we found out because those sneaky Girl Scout cookies were set up. Girl Scouts were set up outside.
Oh yeah.
You know, trying to get. So I got some Girl Scout cookies to pair with, and the mulled barley wine pairs pretty well with the their s'mores.
The s'mores cookies. Yes, Brian. they are
that absolutely nailed it. Well,
yeah. So. I'd say for those of you experimenting with mulled beers at home, so consider that. You know, your large domestic breweries love to showcase how cold the beer is, including putting fake thermometers on their draft towers that say they're 30 whatever degrees. And we know, as beer nerds, we know that that is to mute off flavors. And the opposite happens when you're heating these beers up. You're going to get every bit of astringency or acidity or, you know, hey, this... there's a lot of barrel flavor in this, and that's going to really come out. Any bitterness that you maybe didn't want is going to start coming out. Acidity, all these flavors start to get amplified when you're mulling these beers.
The tartness and the earthiness tartness. From the creek yes. really stand out.
Yes. So,
and the alcohol. Yeah. That's across the board. The alcohol
and booze, 100%. Yes. So when you're mulling them, they really do need to be mulled. I don't think that anyone would say they're like, oh no, it's creek is better when I make it hot.
Right.
You know, Crowderine's better when it's 170 degrees. Like, no.
If it's a back sweetened creek and you put a hot poker in it, it might be better though.
Sure, but those have been added to.
Yes.
You know, they're gonna need sweeteners. You're gonna need to round out these flavors, you need to balance out some of those astringencies that you would expect in a beer that tastes fantastic at a proper serving temperature, that now as you heat it up, we're like, oh wow, these are, you know, I don't, none of us considered like, hey, let's mull an IPA. Like,
I'm gonna have to try that. It's a hazy IPA. I want a juicy, hazy mulled IPA.
Okay. Serve it with some soup on oyster crackers. I think sprinkle some crackers on there.
I mean, orange juice. If orange juice is on the table, I mean,
IPA chowder.
Chowder. Well, you guys don't like a hot orange juice? It's delicious.
We might. I mean, it's not too late.
Do you have any of that overproof rum to put in there?
So that might work out.
Gin.
So I've got one more I want to share here that I think is interesting. I don't think we've talked about before. Is kind of the roots of eggnog. And this is something, it originally was called posset. And Brian, you may remember, we watch a YouTube channel that is reviewing life in the 1700s, in colonial America.
Yes.
And he has covered posset now. But what this started out as, it was really a nutritional thing. It was about getting nutrition when there was really very little to have there. Sometimes used medicinally, like to give someone nourishment. But it was... originally was like warm milk or cream. It was blended with ale or wine, deliciously thickened with curdled eggs.
Delicious.
And then spiced with cinnamon and ginger. And I've heard him talk about posset where sometimes it was made to where you drank it or maybe you ate it like a porridge or something like that. I know I've heard one where they tear up bread, like day old bread, and put in there and mix that up to thicken it even more.
Sure.
But that was one, you know, served hot. You're poor, Brian, as happened a lot in colonial America. You're poor. You've been out working all day. You're hungry. You're a little weak and under the weather. And you have your posset because it's all that's there. And at least you are getting some nutrition from that.
Yeah. From the little bit of looking into it I did, once it hit the U.S., it evolved a lot. Like all of the stuff you're talking about, like from family to family, from region to region, I think it kind of became like the alcoholic beverage goulash or whatever.
It really sounds like it was probably the products that happened to be available at that time. You had an ale or a wine and some eggs and some milk and some cream and this and that, you know. Other than the ale or wine, these are all stuff you're just going to have laying around the farm or whatever. So you just put together what you happen to have, and that's what you eat, man. So they did. I don't know if you knew this or not, but do you know they did not have DoorDash in the 1700s?
No, really?
Yeah.
I mean, how did they eat? I
have posset. Covered that.
Did they have like people that walked around with posset carts and delivered it?
Possibly. Yeah. So that's it. But anyhow. Since we don't have to, you know, eat poverty level food, most of us now, it's something that's developed into eggnog, you know, where we find a fancy eggnog and get it together and you know, enjoy finding them and trying new liquors and stuff in there. Tiffany,
yes,
I think, has some thoughts on possums.
Just eggnog in general. You okay. said something about a curdled egg.
Yes.
Eggs don't curdle.
That's, I didn't think so. That,
it's
okay.
a coddled egg.
Coddled egg.
Oh, coddled. Okay. That could have been a yes. typo.
I've heard of that, but what is
so
that?
So it's, well, it's usually English, like it's an English breakfast situation. Very similar to a poached egg, but it's in a little like ramekin that's baked to a certain
point. Okay.
Whatever.
All right.
But yeah, when you said curdled, I'm like, I think that's more like milk curdles.
Well, thanks for correcting me now instead of letting it go to air like my Las Vegas
like your
NFL
Las Vegas
comment.
Thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We
yeah.
have an ombudsman for this show. Yeah. That's what.
So, yeah. I've seen these things that they sell that you're supposed to put on top of boiling water that's got the divots in there to
so that
poach
will
your
give
eggs.
You,
but that's essentially
a coddled
egg. That
no,
is, coddled, so there's so some differences here.
There are some differences. So I just looked
wow,
it up.
Who
to,
knew? Who
I
knew?
Know. It seems so silly.
Is it like baked, maybe?
So
is that the difference?
Here,
you put it in
I'm
a ramekin
gonna,
and
it
bake
around.
It? Okay.
Controversy over eggs.
Eggs, man. Yeah.
Like, how
well,
did how do poor people cook their eggs?
I
I
eggs are
consume
nice.
A lot
so I'm
of
like,
eggs.
Please do yeah. not. So coddled egg is gently cooked whole in a small dish that's placed in a hot water bath.
Okay.
So you can either do it on the stove or in the oven, but it's essentially, it is like
all
a
right.
poached egg.
All right, Tiffany, we need to further this discussion. Yeah. So
drill down.
That
on
is coddled. Yeah. But putting it on a thing on top of a boiling water
is a poached. Yeah.
No. I don't accept that.
Well, but those things are silly. A real poached egg should be
in
the
liquid.
Water.
Yeah, you swirl it so
yes.
you hold the everything.
Yes.
A little tab
yes.
of vinegar to help
I,
coagulate.
I don't like the vinegar okay. because I don't like the hard white.
All right.
You point out yeah. that it's silly, and I have heard that the English are very silly people. By their own
it
admission
is.
In
well,
some
I
cases.
Well, I lived there for a while. So
okay. Can you confirm that? Are they silly people?
I say they're silly people. They're very serious people.
Okay.
Serious.
Very serious.
When they're silly yeah. when they can Monty Python when they want to, yes.
right?
Right.
And yeah. when they drink Stella, they're silly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, y'all, thank you so much for joining us. Cliff, Zach, thanks for hosting. Zach's done with us already. He's him and Nate are over there on their own conversation. Zach, Nate
I commandeered
has
his phone.
His headphones yeah. halfway off, not
sorry.
Even paying attention
that's
to what's
right.
going on.
Not here. At all.
But y'all, that does wrap it up for this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. We are on location at Truck and Tap in Duluth, Georgia. We love these guys. We appreciate their support so much. We've enjoyed some great hot beverages today.
Yes.
Had a good time with it. But we hope y'all have a good week. We hope you try some of the things that we have suggested today. Let us know. Don't use a curdled egg. It doesn't exist. And don't forget to drink local. Cheers. We'll be right back as Zach pokes Tim's old chub.